What's driving rent to record highs in big cities? I'm David Brancaccio in New York. Rents in some big cities can be wildly high. Case in point, San Francisco, where rent on the typical one-bedroom has now topped $3,700, median. A new report suggests some of the problem is zoning. The most expensive cities tend to have stricter limits on building apartments, Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
California is not building enough apartments, especially in the places with the highest rents. And that's intentional, according to a forthcoming study from the Brookings Institution. Co-author Jenny Schutz says restrictive zoning, like limits on the height of buildings, is designed to curb density.
Wealthy communities like their neighborhoods the way they are. And if they have to have more neighbors, they want their neighbors to be at least as well off as they are.
It's not just homeowners. In his own research, Michael Hankinson, a professor at Baruch College, found that while renters supported more housing in their cities overall, when it came to their own neighborhoods,
these renters in these expensive cities like San Francisco and San Jose and New York were just as opposed to the new development in their neighborhood as were the homeowners.
Some of the concerns are legitimate, he says, like traffic and parking that cities should address. Schutz recommends states offer financial incentives for cities to build more housing and penalties like losing funding for schools and roads if they don't. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Now, a law did go into effect this year in California, making it more attractive for people to build little in-law units, so-called granny flats, on their property to help ease the crunch. And in New York, the median rent on a one-bedroom is currently just under $3,000 a month. The brand new African Continental Free Trade Agreement is the biggest new trade bloc since the World Trade Organization came together in the 1990s. It covers 54 of the 55 nations in Africa, with Eritrea still working through the process. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has more.
Once it really gets rolling, this trade deal would cover more than a billion people. Yvonne Mahango is an economist at Renaissance Capital in South Africa.
What essentially they're trying to achieve is to ease trade between African countries.
Many African countries trade more with China or the U.S. than they do with each other. This deal would eliminate most tariffs, which the IMF says could boost regional trade up to 25%. But lowering tariffs, says Mahango, is the easy part.
One of the biggest obstacles to trade is the logistical challenges and infrastructure, and just the bureaucracy of going through customs at various borders.
The political will for improved trade is there, but details on how to fix those logistical problems are still being hammered out. John Campbell is a senior fellow focused on Africa at the Council on Foreign Relations.
It's going to take some years to implement, and then some years for the impact to be seen.
And if it all works out, he says, this deal could transform the economies of Africa. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Checking the markets, the 100-share index in London is down 0.2%. Here, U.S. stock index futures are all down in the 3 to 4 tenths of a percent range.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
What are we supposed to work, 40 hours a week? I know, it's probably more given all the online homework we're often expected to do, but check this out. In China, many employees at tech companies are expected to work a 9-9-6 schedule from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 6 days a week. That is 72 hours. The hard work of these tech people has been credited with helping Chinese firms challenge the likes of Google or Amazon abroad. But there is a growing backlash. Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pak spoke to tech workers in the eastern city of Hangzhou.
For the past 6 years, Cheng Shi has been working on software in the tech industry, and he says long hours are routine.
At this one big firm, my coworker told me that if it's 9 p.m. and you see everyone else is still working, then you should also stay, just to put on a show for the boss.
At that time, he shared an apartment with someone who worked in the same industry, Zheng Jinghao. We caught up with him at a local restaurant.
Once I went for a week without showering because I was stuck at the office.
At another company where he worked, the employer offered him bonuses, late-night snacks, and a fold-out bed under his desk to sleep on, basically to encourage long hours. And it put a lot of demands on employees who were off the clock.
The first time the office calls your company cell phone and you don't answer, it's okay. If it happens a second time, you'll be fined $7. If you don't reply to a message sent on the WeChat app, you'll get fined $15.
But in March, some software developers complained online that such long hours can be deadly, and it triggered a national debate.
That debate made me realize that some of those work policies were inhumane.
Big tech bosses have largely dismissed these complaints. Here's tech hardware giant Huawei executive Xiaoyang at the Shanghai Consumer Electronics Show in June. He boasts that employees are volunteering to work overtime. But across China's tech industry, some workers are saying no more. Again, Zheng Jinghao.
A friend of mine lost her husband suddenly, a year after they got married. He worked at a big tech firm, and he was only 31. His death is definitely linked to long work hours.
Today, Zheng Jinghao still takes work calls on the weekends, but he's moved into the healthcare field, where overtime is not mandatory. Though he earns a third less than before. In Hangzhou City, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
And Hello Kitty got busted by the antitrust police. The EU's competition commissioner has hit the Japanese company behind the brand with a $7 million fine. The EU says Sanrio set up illegal licensing deals for the cartoon cat girl that made it hard for someone in one European country to order Hello Kitty stuff from another. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.